There's so much I love you. Everything you do make me wanna smile. Can I not like you for a while?
No,
but you won't let me. You upset me, girl. And then you kiss my lips. All of a sudden I forget
that I was upset.
I can't remember what you did.
But I hate it.
You know exactly what to do so that I can't stay mad at you for too long. That's wrong.
Touch so that I don't wanna fuss and fight no more. Said I despise that I adore you.
And I hate how much I love you, boy.
Yeah.
I can't stand how much I need you.
I need you.
And I hate how much I love you, boy.
Girl.
But I just can't let you go.
Astro Talk. I love you so. So join Marco with Rihanna and Neo and listen every Thursday at 2 p.m. on 101.9.
The only one that makes me laugh.
Sadness, not fair. How you take advantage of the fact that I love you beyond the reason why. And it just ain't right.
Hello, welcome. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. It is beautiful. They said it was going to be cold, but it's not. So in about, let's see, today is the 8, 9, 10, 11, 12th. So I think in about 9, 10 days, we're going to have, I think it's called the spring solstice. So I believe what happens is there's equal hours of day and night, and then slowly until June 22nd, which is the longest, or 21st, the days will keep getting longer. And June 21st to 22nd will have the most hours of daylight, least hours of darkness, and spring is coming. I saw a story on the TV the other day, and then I didn't follow it up. Something about a star, an exoplanet is possibly tugging at the star, and what it looks like, it was a bulge. So there's a bulge in the star from the tug of the exoplanet. So this is a star in another solar system, and I tried to look for it, couldn't find it. So that would have been interesting, how they got that picture of something. Anyway, something is tugging on that star. So it looks like it's got a nice big bulge on one side. There was another story, and it's completely escaped me now. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, there's a lot of things, because astronomy is a big topic. One thing that is heartwarming to me, I like this. It's about the Gateway. So the Gateway is, I believe it's going to be a station around the moon. And astronauts can drop down from Gateway onto the lunar surface. And some astronauts can stay on Gateway. So it's an orbital output, which will support Artemis lunar operations. And NASA selects the first science instrument to send to Gateway. So hooray, there is some movement, and something that I find there's not enough movement, and it's basically going out into space with human beings. And I suppose I had a dream that by now we would have been anyway close to Mars, but we're, looks like, nowhere near to Mars. We're worried about coronavirus and other things. So I will talk about other things. There's magnetosphere multiscale missions 5th year breaking records in space. So looks like they're looking at the magnetosphere or the magnetosphere. So 50 years ago today, Apollo 13 was 1 month to launch. And I think that was the one with the problem. I do remember Apollo 9 when the astronauts went around the moon for the first time. And on the launch on the ground, I believe one of the astronauts got super sick. So he was soiled for the whole trip. And basically inside the spacecraft was soiled with, I guess, when he threw up. And it was a scary time for the astronauts because there was a lot of firsts on these moon missions. And when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, there was, people were holding their breath because things were going wrong. The computer was shutting off. And no one, I think they had tested in terms of like a video game console landing on the moon and stuff and taken off, but they hadn't done any real tests with it. So no one knew what's going to happen. And also, I started to mention it and I interrupted myself. But when the astronauts, I believe Apollo 9, went around the moon for the first time, the backside of the moon, they were terrified. They were terrified. And there's always a back channel that the media is not aware of where the astronauts could have aborted. And NASA said to them, okay, let's abort. This is scary stuff. The astronauts said, no, no. So there was a lot of things we didn't know about what happened there and behind the scenes. And of course, the computer went wrong and they showed simulations because pretty soon, I think it's coming up to the 50 years for Apollo 13 when there was the explosion in one of the spacecrafts and then they had to come back. There was a lot of danger to be faced. And of course, probably the most tragic one was Apollo 1, where 3 astronauts burned to death inside the capsule on the launch pad. And their screams were being heard and nobody could open the hatches. So they burned to death. And the astronauts that had to go after that, and of course their families, their wives, their kids, knew that the previous astronauts burned to death. So the astronauts said, we're still going. But imagine what it's like to their families when your dad is going in a space capsule and the person before that you knew burned to death. So there's lots of, in the early days of Apollo, there was, and in the space, in basically NASA, there's a lot of risks involved and astronauts know this. And so I am watching shows now because I guess it's, a lot of shows are playing again that are telling about the Apollo missions. And believe it or not, quite a few people got bored of the Apollo missions after Apollo 12 was like, go to the moon, big deal. But then Apollo 13 got some interest up again. And, oh, I should have mentioned this. We know the coronavirus, it's probably the worst thing that's happened to the world in a long time. And I was in China or in Taiwan in 2003 and nobody knew about SARS and I caught SARS. So I was traveling around infected. I was quite sick and then I got treatment in Shanghai. So this has happened before, but this is scarier. So hopefully there was an article here, I can find it, and it's not popping up, but there was an article talking about what does the coronavirus teach us about if we go to Mars, can we bring back a virus like that? So something along that line. So let me see if I can find it. I'm not finding it now. So it's funny, when you don't look for it, it's in your face. And when you look for it, you can't see it. And it's probably still right in your face. So, oh, here. What can the coronavirus outbreak teach us about bringing Mars samples back to Earth? So a new virus called SARS-CoV-2 is a coronavirus that has caused an outbreak of disease called COVID-19. But what does it have to do with Mars? So we'll talk about that today. So there's still a lot of topics. I'm going to keep my topics today not about black holes or something very far away, even though we should be excited that there was the largest explosion ever recorded, and I reported something wrong last week. So what I reported is, this is, I think, what actually happened. It was a chunk of, maybe called wall, or something was blown apart. So I believe what was seen was a cavity or a hole blown out by the Chandra X-ray telescope. I hope it's a Chandra X-ray telescope. I'll be an idiot if I'm wrong. Okay, so here it goes back. I just want to cover that because last week I may have given the wrong information. I may have said that they saw a black hole and explosion, and it's possible they saw it. But I believe now what they were saying on the news was they saw the cavity or the something blown out by the black hole explosion, or some kind of explosion that was probably five times as big as anything that's happened before. So this is dated February 27th, 2020. It says record-breaking explosion by black hole spotted. And it has a picture here, and it says, evidence for the biggest explosion seen in the universe comes from a combination of X-rays and data from Chandra and XMM Newton. I believe that's the European Space Telescope. And the Murchison Wide Field Array and Giant Meter Wave Telescope, as shown here. The eruption is generated by a black hole located in the cluster's central galaxy, which has blasted out jets and carved a large cavity in the surrounding hot gas. So part of the thing was, I think it's possible what they saw was the cavity that was carved out. Researchers estimate the explosion released five times more energy than the previous record holder and hundreds of thousands of times more than a typical galaxy cluster. Okay, so it's I'll give you a bit of update on this. The big explosion has been found, apart from the Big Bang itself, so says Simona Giannitucci of the Naval Research Laboratory in Washington, D.C. Quote, in some ways, the blast is similar to how the eruption of Mount St. Helens in 1980 ripped off the top of the mountain. A key difference is that you can fit 15 Milky Way galaxies in a row into this crater eruption punched into the cluster's hot gas. End quote. So it is a big eruption. You can fit 50 Milky Ways in it, 15. Astronomers make the discovery using X-ray data from Chandra and ESA's XSM Newton and radio data from the Murchison Wide Field Array in Australia and the Giant Meter Wave Radio Telescope in India. The unrivaled outbursts were detected in the Ophiuchus, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, O-P-H-I-U-C-U-S galaxy cluster, which is about 390 million light years from Earth. So it happened 390 million light years, or years ago. Galaxy clusters are the largest structures in the universe, held together by gravity, containing thousands of individual galaxies, dark matter, and hot gas. Wow, big thing. In the center of the cluster, there is a large galaxy that contains a supermassive black hole. Researchers think that the source of that gigantic eruption is this black hole. It's not saying the size of the black hole, but it's supermassive anyway. Although black holes are famous for pulling materials towards them, they often expel prodigious amounts of material and energy. So there's a new word, prodigious. I always talk about anomaly. Now I have another word to talk about, prodigious. This happens when matter falling towards the black hole is redirected into jets or beams that blast outward into space and slam into surrounding material. So Chandra in 2016, first revealed hints of the giant explosion in the Ophiuchus galaxy cluster. Norbert Werner and colleagues reported the discovery of an unusual curved edge in the Chandra image of the cluster. So that's what I think they saw, the curved edge or the blown out part. I'm not sure if they actually saw, but they probably did, the black hole explosion. They considered whether this represented part of the wall of the cavity in the hot gas created by jets from the supermassive black hole. However, they discounted this possibility in part because a huge amount of energy would have been required for the black hole to create a cavity this large. But later they said, yes, an enormous explosion did in fact occur. First, they showed the curved edge is also detected by XSM Newton, thus confirming Chandra's observation. The crucial advance was the use of new radio data from the MWA and data from the GMRT archives to show the curved edge is indeed part of the wall of the cavity because it borders a region filled with radio emission. This emission is from electrons accelerated to nearly the speed of light. The acceleration likely originated from the supermassive black hole. So black holes, like the one in the center of our galaxy, ours is a baby. It's like 4.3 or 4.6 million solar masses, but it's still a supermassive black hole. Some supermassive black holes are 6, 8, or maybe even 10 billion solar masses. So they are huge. They're really big. And another show that I watch, I like watching astronomy shows. This show talked about the supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy, and they were tracing how they could reveal the existence of the black hole by observing the paths of the stars in that region. And some of them looked like they were rotating around something, but that something wasn't there. So they surmised that it indeed was a supermassive black hole. And sometimes we get bored of a black hole. We all know what a black hole is. It blows things apart, and then it sucks everything in, and it crushes it to a point. But one thing that's so interesting about a black hole is, maybe I'll discover it, maybe I won't, probably I won't, is the physics inside a black hole. It's still unknown what happens to the matter. There's no explanation for it. There's no explanation for dark matter. So even though there's lots of discoveries, lots of new things happening, physics still can't explain certain things. So that's inside a black hole what happens. And there's also dark matter or dark energy. What exactly is it? That's what they call it. And astronomy is more fun because we can chase down these things and say, what does this mean? What does that mean? So I just talked about the explosion in Ophiuchus, 390 million light years away, and the I think they detected the explosion in 2016. So I really don't know what was the happening on the Earth at that time. And here there's another article about OSIRIS-REx. I'm an ambassador for OSIRIS-REx, and I haven't done anything, so I should do something about that. But OSIRIS-REx also caught an unexpected glimpse of a newly discovered black hole. So it doesn't say where the thing is, and I'm not going to read it. But anyway, captures X-rays radiating from a point off an asteroid's edge. So their initial checks, they found it was a black hole. So there's black holes everywhere. And let's not talk about black holes right now. So what should I talk about today? Aha, there it is. NASA selects first science instruments to send to Gateway. So I think this was in the works for a while, and then President Trump announced it, but there is going to be, I think, Artemis lunar operations. I think Gateway is the orbital outpost around the moon. So I guess it orbits around the moon. And then astronauts can drop down to the moon from the gateway. It's possible a habitation will be set up on the moon, but astronauts, I believe, will live on Gateway. So let's read the article. This is March 12, 2020, and it says NASA selects first science instruments to send to Gateway. NASA has selected the first two science investigations to fly, to scientific investigations to fly aboard the Gateway, an orbital outpost which will support Artemis lunar operations while demonstrating the technologies necessary to conduct a historic human mission to Mars. The instruments selected for Gateway will observe space weather and monitor the sun's radiation environment. So says NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine, and quote, building the Gateway with our commercial international partners is a critical component of sustainable lunar exploration and the Artemis program. Using the Gateway as a platform for robotic and human exploration around the moon will help inform what we do on the lunar surface as well as prepare us for our next giant leap, human exploration of Mars, end quote. Yeah, it is going to be a giant leap because it probably won't happen till 2040, I think. Okay, so 2040. Maybe I'll be surprised. And, of course, they're going to probably send spacecraft up to Mars with humans that will not land. So that's their first thing, just like what happened in the moon. So they'll fly up to Mars, circle Mars for a while, and because of the orientation of the orbits, Earth and Mars move at different orbits, and then when the first Mars mission takes off, I believe it takes 6 months to get to Mars, by that time Earth has moved, Mars has moved. So if they try to fly back, let's say a month later, they're going to have a long flight. So they have to wait and wait and wait. So they might be there quite a few months, maybe 6 months or maybe longer. So as I said, I believe they will not land on Mars on the first one. And this Gateway on the moon, this Artemis program, just like the NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine says, it prepares NASA for their next giant leap, which is human exploration of Mars. Okay, so they selected the radiation instrument package. So the radiation instrument package built by the European Space Agency will help provide an understanding of how to keep astronauts safe by monitoring the radiation exposure in Gateway's unique orbit. So as we see, I shouldn't complain because there's lots to do. A lot of research still to do. They're going to monitor how radiation affects humans who are long-term in space. And it's different than the International Space Station, which even though astronauts stay there a long time, they've probably got it down in terms of protecting astronauts. So there's a lot of things that need to be done. And of course, I love NASA, but sometimes I dump on them like the James Webb Space Telescope. Who knows when it's going to be up? It's been delayed over and over again. And that meant I interviewed someone a couple years ago about WFIRST. That's supposed to be the successor to James Webb. And so it's possible that could be delayed too. I can look back at my notes, see when WFIRST was supposed to be launched, but you know, it's going to be delayed, of course. So this is a nice story for me because it's great. So what I'm going to do is I'll go for a break. That was a bit of a long one. And when we come back, we will talk more astronomy. So this is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Ain't no shorts gonna be taken. Word up. If heads only knew how I felt about the rap game, they know I ain't going with it.
This is Marco, and Heather B is verbally distributing the rap game, and I'm verbally distributing the astronomy game at CITR 101.9 at UBC on Marco's Astro Talk.
If heads only knew how I felt about the rap game, they know I ain't going out. I'm every woman like Whitney and Shaka. I sparks the green light, the chalk tie that could ganja. I stay mad big, twisted up like a pretzel. Raining on hoes with weak shows like Kevin Spencer. My head so heavy, heavy headed, heavy handed. It be these wild niggas that I wrote and stand with. I be rhyming till dust. Now trials and triumphs, my grill be like partners, employed by the peoples.
First off, congratulations on being the first subject of our Great Minds series. Be honest, is this the single greatest honour you have ever received?
Yes.
Good. It's a little hard to read your tone of voice. When you say that, are you being sarcastic?
Yes.
I thought so. If there is one thing you want people to understand about your work, bearing in mind that most people will never understand anything about your work, what would that thing be?
Imaginary time. People think it's something you have in dreams, or when you're up against a deadline. But it's a well-defined concept. Imaginary time is like another direction in space. It's the one bit of my work science fiction writers haven't used, because they don't understand it.
Idiots. People are such idiots, because presumably, to my mind, you're simply talking about the theoretical measurement obtained from real time by a wink rotation of pi divided by 2 in a complex plane where t equals I times t. It's not that difficult to get your head around.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
That's it. Pack it up.
It would be a shame if you miss AstroTalk on Thursdays at 2 o'clock with Marco and Molly Love on CITR 101.9.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, Anthasiakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.
Welcome back. This is Marco and AstroTalk. Let's talk more about this Gateway project. It's going to be a collaborative effort with the ESA, which is European Space Agency, the Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency, Canadian Space Agency. So they're actively all engaged in discussions with NASA to support the construction and operation of the Gateway, which again will support lunar surface missions and pave the way for the human exploration of Mars. Now, this is totally exciting. I believe last year the timeline was within 5 years they're going to be up there, and I think they might be. So it'd be exciting to have something to talk about rather than the weather. We can talk about the space weather. So so says NASA Administrator, building the Gateway with our commercial and international partners is a critical component of sustainable lunar exploration and the Artemis program, end quote. So it's the radiation package will be built by the European Space Agency. The Space Weather Instrument Suite, built by NASA, will observe solar particles and solar wind created by the sun. As we move deeper into space, human and robotic explorers face greater challenges from the sometimes violent and unpredictable outbursts of the sun. The Space Weather Instrument Suite will gather data and enhance our ability to forecast events originating from the sun that could affect our astronauts on and around the moon, as well as the future mission to Mars. There's another way to look at this too, about going into outer space. Watching the news last night, somebody in Italy commented, "We had no idea we were going to be overwhelmed by coronavirus. The way that it just overwhelmed the country and broke and exploded into the way it did." And this could happen in the U.S. too. There was an evaluation last night of how many masks, how many breathing instruments are available. And if a pandemic, if something does break out in the States, it's really big. I believe it said there are maybe 10% of the masks or the breathing instruments that will be needed. So that's what's happening in Italy. Lots of supplies are being sent to Italy. And the reason I brought this up was because who knows, like the coronavirus hit us and overwhelmed us. And you know how Trump canceled his infectious disease thing. He fired all the people just when they needed it. So, and what's going to happen is, imagine a scenario where global warming overwhelms the Earth. All of a sudden, there's a scenario where something happened that was totally unpredictable. And sometimes people will predict it, like Bernie Sanders has said, look, there's climate global warming deniers, and it's real. And if all of a sudden, what happens if half of Florida floods? What do you do? How can you mitigate against that? So there's a real need to go into outer space, because how long do we have on Earth? We've got viruses, we got global warming, there's dramatic forest fires, they're burning down the Amazon, and Australia's burning, and it was burning anyway. So probably one of the smartest guys on the planet when he was alive, Stephen Hawking, said, we might have 100 years left on Earth. So who knows? Technology might be developed where maybe if global sea levels rise, how can you protect these low-lying areas? Like Jakarta is probably going to be underwater. Venice, Miami might go underwater. Even though when I was in Florida, I saw they built dikes around there, and there are dikes around Richmond. But what if global sea levels rise? And of course, Trump made a joke of it when they're talking about building some kind of barrier in New York City. He said, just get a mop and a broom. It wasn't very funny. So these programs, I believe, and a lot of people believe, they're very essential. And not just that, to go into space, but to do something about global warming, which keeps going. So global warming, where I read last week, I think there's 30% of our Earth is covered with forests, and that number's been shrinking, and it keeps shrinking, so there's no improvement in it. So the Amazon keeps burning, Australia keeps burning. Outer space is somewhere that is our future, and maybe some people will say, well, why spend money in outer space? Solve global warming, solve this. But there's a lot of things that we could have said, oh, let's solve homelessness before we spend money on this, or let's solve this problem before we spend money on that. It probably will not be solved. We can't solve homelessness, can we? All these problems, so getting into outer space is an important thing. So says Thomas Zurbuchen, NASA's Associate Administrator for Science in Washington, quote, our sun and the environment around is very dynamic. The instrument suite will help us observe the particles and energy that our star emits and mitigate the risk to astronauts at the moon and eventually Mars. Not only will we learn more about our space environment, but we'll also learn how to improve forecasting space weather wherever the Artemis generation journeys away from Earth, end quote. So, of course, we do have shows on TV where, what's that one with Ethan Hawke and his wife? I forgot what it was called, but he goes up into space on a mission to Titan and Uma Thurman, yes. There's all kinds of scenarios where Bruce Willis goes to an asteroid and somehow something goes wrong, so he's left behind to blow up the asteroid that it's going to crunch the you-know-what of Earth, but he saves the day. So we've seen all kinds of things like that. And really, what it looks like right now is we're in our infancy in terms of going out into the solar system for human space flights. There's lots of instruments that have gone up there and doing things just like right now. OSIRIS-REx caught an unexpected glimpse of a black hole at asteroid Bennu. So there's a lot of exciting things happening. So I'll finish this article about NASA selects first sign instruments to send to Gateway, stated March 12 on NASA.gov. And additional scientific payloads will be selected to fly aboard the Gateway in the future. These investigations will take advantage of the unique environment in lunar orbit, one that cannot be duplicated on Earth on the International Space Station. The Gateway will orbit near the Moon and be occupied periodically by astronauts as part of NASA's Sustainable Lunar Exploration Plan. NASA awarded Maxar Technologies a contract in May 2019 to develop the power and propulsion element which will provide solar arrays and maneuvering capabilities. NASA is continuing negotiations with Northrop Grumman to build the Habitation and Logistics Outpost, or HALO, the first pressurized module for crew visiting the Gateway. ESA, Japanese Space Agency, and Canadian Space Agency are all actively involved in discussion. So says NASA Administrator Jim Bernstein, in quote, this is an incredible moment in human spaceflight as NASA is closer than any other time in history since the Apollo program to returning to the lunar surface. As America is leading a return to the moon, and this time we're taking all of humanity with us to explore long term and get ready for Mars, end quote. So I believe if you read into it, it's 2020, maybe Gateway will be up there, maybe 5 years, let's say that's the timeline, maybe, but it could be 2027, 2028, 2030. Then they'll do about maybe 5 years of exploration and stuff. So that would bring us to 2035, and then they'll prepare for Mars. So it looks like Mars is not going to happen until 2040. And again, as I've mentioned, Mars will be the first human flight to Mars. Might be just going around Mars, not landing. And there's also going to be tests where humans go aboard the, I had it right in the tip of my tongue and then it slipped away. The rocket, the spacecraft that's going to bring them there. So it's kind of exciting time, but man, it's coming up slowly. So there's one here. It says Artemis 1 spacecraft returns to Kennedy after successful HIO test. So that's on NASA.gov March 9th. Media are invited to NASA's Space Center in Kennedy, Florida. It happened a couple days ago, Monday, to watch the arrival. Orion spacecraft. Okay. The Orion spacecraft for Artemis 1. The crew and service module stock will be offloaded from NASA's Super Guppy aircraft after its return from Sandusky, Ohio. The recently completed spacecraft spent the last several months in the world's premier space environments test facility, undergoing thermal vacuum and electromagnetic environment testing to certify the vehicle for Artemis missions to the moon. Engineers and technicians at Kennedy stand ready to welcome the spacecraft back and begin performing final processing and integration for the launch of the Artemis mission. So one thing that has come to my mind quite a few times is, why not put something on the moon like a ray gun or bombs or something? So if an asteroid's coming, it's going to blow us away, then we can shoot it down from the moon. So they've maybe already done that. So there's lots of things going on around the moon. So now what's going to happen is I am going to go for a break. And when we come back, we will talk more astronomy on AstroTalk. And I will stay with the current solar system theme, so I won't go away. I won't do anything else. I'll just basically talk more about our wonderful solar system and all the great things that are happening in there. So I will come back in a second. This is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Wine up the thing till it pile up. Big bumper girl just a wine and a wild up. They must spoil me a stock till it pile up. My money no, so it my
you
money
no. Like you mean it. Dance like you on fire and you want me to know. You move like you mean it, shawty. See the look on your face. You don't wanna fight, I wanna make love, maybe both. They got me looking at you, watching. The way you wind it and pop it. One more time, go wind and pop it, yeah, yeah. Pumping that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, I could watch it all night. Feel up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Feel up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody's singing.
You're listening to Mayo. CITR 101.9 and Marco's AstroTalk. Push back.
Crazy, take me to the bar, couple shots, no chasing. My booty amazing, come on, baby, chase it. Back to the floor, give us space. And
looking at me, watching the way I wanted him pop it. One more time, I wanted him pop it, yeah. Baby, that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, you could watch me all night. Pull up on this bomba, boy, I don't mind. Pull up on this bomba, boy, I don't mind.
I was a prisoner.
I was a prisoner. Cocaine addiction.
Cocaine took my dreams. It made me lie, steal.
Cocaine took my will, my soul.
And all I wanted was more cocaine. Cocaine Anonymous gave me freedom and saved my life. If you got a problem with cocaine, pick up the phone. We're here to help.
Contact Cocaine Anonymous toll-free by calling 866-662-8300 or find them online at ca-bc.ca.
Gotta find
This is Marco, and I am Patras Workerman. Every Thursday at 2 p.m. on CITR 101.9 on AstroTalk. Welcome back. This is Marco on Astro Talk, and I'm going to wrap it up. It's 2:51, a few more minutes to go. I'm going to stick with the solar system theme and talk about an article in NASA.gov. It says NASA's MMS marks its fifth year breaking records in space. Since its launch in 2015, NASA's Magnetosphere Multiscale Mission, or MMS, has been making new discoveries that it flies around Earth, studying magnetic reconnection, the explosive snapping and forging of magnetic field lines at the heart of space weather storms that manifest around Earth. In its first year, MMS's state-of-the-art design broke records, and it hasn't stopped excelling since. So here's a nice photo, and this is an article in NASA.gov. It says, NASA's MMS marks its fifth year breaking records in space, dated March 12th. So it shows a video, and it says, just as gravity is one key to how things move on Earth, a process called magnetic reconnection is key to how electrically charged particles speed through space. Scientists have observed the phenomena many times in Earth's magnetic environment, the magnetosphere. So what is, how does magnetic reconnection work? Determining the details of how magnetic reconnection works was one of the key jobs MMS was tasked with, and the mission delivered. Before MMS, scientists didn't truly understand the specifics of how magnetic reconnection works. They only had general ideas, but MMS quickly changed that. Mission observations determined which of several 50 old theories about magnetic reconnection were correct, and further showed how the physics of electrons dominates the process, which had not been predicted. Much of the discovery was driven by MMS's innovative instrument design, so says Jim Birch, principal investigator for MMS. And quote, we increase MMS's instruments measuring speeds 100 times from previous instruments. It's allowed us to see things no one had been able to measure before MMS. Okay, so this mission uses four identical spacecraft flying in a pyramid shape to measure magnetic field lines and charged particles in three dimensions. In 2016, their trajectory won the spacecraft a Guinness World Record for highest altitude fix of a GPS, 43,500 miles above the surface, which it later smashed with a fix at 116,300 miles. So what does that mean? Guess they measured something that high. Additionally, when the satellites are closest to Earth, they move at up to 22,000 miles per hour, making the fastest known operational use of GPS receivers. So still hasn't tell us what is magnetic recreation. So number one said how magnetic recognition works. So again, this is an article. NASA's MMS marks its fifth year breaking records in space, dated March 12, 2020. So number two, first it said, number one, how magnetic recognition works. Somehow electrons are speeding around. Okay, number two, reconnection in surprising new places. In the 5 years after launch, MMS made over 1,000 trips around Earth, passing through countless magnetic reconnection events. It saw magnetic reconnection where scientists first expected it, behind the Earth away from the Sun, and it discovered magnetic reconnection in several new places. Completely surprising scientists, MMS has seen events in turbulent regions in front of Earth that were previously expected to be too tumultuous for magnetic reconnection. It has also observed magnetic reconnection in magnetic flux ropes, giant magnetic tubes, which can form in the wake of previous magnetic reconnection events, and in Kelvin-Helmholtz vortices, the same phenomena that are created when wind blows over water to create waves on the surface. Okay, so it still hasn't told me about magnetic reconnection. What is it? Let's see if I can go on just a simple way, webpage, and type in magnetic reconnection definition. There we go. Definition. What I've been exposed to it before I read about it, but you know how things are. So the magnetic reconnection is a physical process occurring in highly conductive plasmas in which the magnetic topology is rearranged and magnetic energy is converted to kinetic energy, thermal energy, and particle acceleration. Magnetic reconnection occurs on timescales intermediate between slow resistive diffusion of the magnetic field and fast Elfvenic timescales. Okay, there we got it, even though I didn't understand that. So I'm going to end in a minute because I have one more thing to read about, and it's about this mini moon discovered orbiting Earth. It's been with us for 3 years, astronomers say. Sadly, it'll probably be gone by spring. Ah, that's too bad. DeGrasse Tyson, whatever that physicist, astrophysicist name, he said it's not a moon, just a rock that somehow got captured by us. So tumbling through Earth's increasingly crowded orbit are about 5,000 satellites, 500,000 pieces of human-made debris, and only one confirmed natural object, the moon. Now, astronomers working out at the University of Arizona Stewart Observatory think they may have discovered a second natural satellite, or at least a temporary one. Big news, it says from their Twitter, Earth has a new temporary captured object, possible mini moon called 2020 Space Big C Big D 3. On the night of February 15th, my Catalina Sky Survey teammate Teddy Prun and I found a 20th magnitude object. Here are the discovery images. So a mini moon, also known as a temporarily captured object, is a space rock that gets caught in Earth's orbit for several months or years before shooting off into the distant solar system again or burning up in our planet's atmosphere. So what's cool is the two moons in Mars, they're captured, and one of them is going to eventually spin down and crash on the moon. Could be a couple million years. And isn't that cool? We'll put our first habitat on moon, on the moon, or on Mars, and then the mini moon will spiral out of control and it'll crash on it and kill it. So that might happen. So one of the captured mini moons of Mars is spiraling into Mars, and a few million years it might crash on the surface. And the other one is spiraling slowly in a bigger orbit, and it'll eventually be flung out. So that's all we need to know about Mars and its mini moons today. But we have a real moon, but of course we know our moon is slowly moving away from us every year. And guess what? I'm finished. So I've talked a bit about astronomy today. There's something I read about magnetic reconnection before. I forget what it is. So anyway, have a pleasant day. I will sign out now. This is Marco. You have been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.